Congratulations. You found it.
You know what time it is.
This is New York Game Day. It's 3 hours of the most informative and entertaining NFL news in the league. Now here's former NFL defensive lineman Chris Canty, former Jets GM and ESPN insider Mike Tannenbaum, and your host, Anita Marks.
Week 8. It is New York Game Day here on 98.7. ESPN and Chris Canty back in action with me and of course Mike Tannenbaum. Chris,
that's right, Anita.
How you doing?
I'm excited.
I'm excited
to be back on with you guys. A little Sunday pregame.
That's right.
Can't wait for it.
Mike Tannenbaum, how you doing, man? Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Chris, good to be back with you, my friend.
Absolutely. We got a lot to dive into too, Mr. T. A lot to get into.
We do. And right here in our own backyard, as we know, we've got the Jets. They actually are in Kansas City taking on the Chiefs. Oh, God. God save them. And you've got the Tampa Bay Bucks on Monday night right here in our own backyard going up against the Giants. Guys, could you ask for a more brutal weekend for both these New York teams? Let's start with the Kansas City Chiefs hosting the Jets. And my heart goes out to Sam Darnold, right? Like, I know the big storyline here and what the nation has been talking about is Trevor Lawrence, and will he come out of Clemson, and will the Jets take him? And let's be honest, the hand that Sam Darnold has been dealt has been a pretty crappy one. Now he goes to Kansas City to take on a Kansas City Chiefs team in bad weather with P. Ryan and Frank Gore in the backfield and really a lackluster wide receiving core. Bernard Perryman is not expected to play. Crowder is not expected to play. Denzel Mims is expected to be his go-to guy. And they're going up against the best offense in the NFL. How are they going to keep pace? Chris, let's start with you. How bad of a bloodbath are you expecting later on this afternoon?
Well, I think that's going to be dependent upon how motivated the Kansas City Chiefs are. And that's the one thing I will say about them as opposed to any of the other echelon teams in the National Football League. They are the ultimate flip-the-switch team. When they put it in gear, there's nobody that can compete with them. But it's just a matter of whether or not they're going to be complacent and come out lethargic. And we've seen them do that a couple of times this year. It happened against the Chargers and it happened against the Raiders, and they ended up losing a game at home. So it just depends on what version of the Chiefs you're going to get. But since that loss against the Raiders, they've looked like a team that's pretty locked in, especially what we saw them do to the Denver Broncos last Sunday. So, again, I think it's all dependent upon what Kansas City Chiefs team lines up. As you mentioned, you know, not having your top two wide receivers, that's going to be tough on Sam Darnold. But I think the most important thing for Dowell Loggins to do is be able to use Sam Darnold's athleticism to put pressure on the Chiefs defense. Move the launch point. Get him on the move. Give him some, you know, half-field reads, you know, one read, two read, and if it's not there, take off and go. I think this is going to have to be a game where Sam uses his legs to try to move the chains, and if they can do that consistently, I think they have an opportunity to sustain drives and move the ball. A lot of like what we saw in the first half of that game that they had last week, I think that's what it needs to look like in terms of the play calling and then the productivity that you want to see from Sam.
Mike?
Yeah, I see this week as the two New York teams warming up the what I think, if I had to pick what the Super Bowl will be, right now I'm saying it's a Kansas City-Tampa Bay Super Bowl. And I think the two New York teams this week are warming those teams up, you know, starting today in Kansas City, and then obviously Giants playing Tampa Bay. So I agree with Chris. I think at some point, and I know you used the term unfair, Anita, about the circumstance that Sam Darnold's been put in, but I got to tell you, like, pro football's never fair.
Completely agree.
A head coach perspective, a GM perspective, a playing perspective, there is no perfect situation. There is no perfect job. Make it better, Sam. Make it better. Let's see some greatness. You could blame the play caller. You could blame this. You can blame that. Be great. Don't turn the ball over. Play a clean game. Use cadence. Get them off sides. Do a lot of the little things that great quarterbacks do. Know where your hots are. Don't take sacks. Don't turn the ball over. And play. If you play a clean game and make your teammates better, I'm not saying you're going to win the game, but I bet you they can make this game a lot more competitive than people realize if Sam Darnold starts showing that he was a top five pick, somebody that's worthy of being in the discussion as one of the better young quarterbacks in the game.
So let me ask you guys this, because we're getting closer to the trade deadline on Tuesday, right? And I had Bill Barnwell on my show yesterday, and I posed the question, you know, do you think Sam Darnold gets traded? And he said, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he would. I asked where a good landing spot would be, and a lot of people feel the Indianapolis Colts. This could be a one and done for Phillip Rivers with the Colts. They've got a top notch offensive line, a lot of talent at the wide receiving core, plethora of running backs in that backfield. But guys, you know, I feel the narrative when I'm watching, you know, all the sports talk on television and listening on radio. Sam Darnold's a bust. Sam Darnold's a bust. Sam Darnold's a bust. I don't think Sam Darnold's a bust. Again, I understand life isn't fair. Mama Mimi told me that for many, many, many years growing up as a kid. Mom, that's not fair. Life's not fair, sweetheart. I get that. The NFL's not fair. I get that. But I guess my question to you guys is, A, do you have an opinion on whether or not Sam Darnold is a bust or not? Do you feel that the hand that he's been dealt has not been a fair indication of what talent he brings to the NFL? And do you feel he will thrive at a different location? Let's just say the Colts. Chris?
Well, I think your opinion of Sam Darnold is largely based on what you thought of him coming out of USC. I don't think we've seen enough in this 3-year sample size to make any definitive determination, certainly not in the affirmative. So however you felt about Sam when he was coming out in 2018 is probably how you feel about him now. I will say this. I think he has an opportunity to follow the same type of career trajectory that we saw his predecessor with Adam Gase, Ryan Tannehill, who was with the Miami Dolphins, had a change of scenery going to the Tennessee Titans, and you saw him lead that team to the AFC Championship game and on the way to a 4-year contract extension down there in Nashville. So I think Sam has a similar opportunity if he gets with a program that has the infrastructure that's already in place, a team like the Colts, a team like the 49ers. I think if you could make a case that if Sam Darnold was a starting quarterback for both of those teams are better than they are today. So I think there's something to be said for what Bill Barnwell has kind of floated out there the last couple of weeks about Sam Darnold potentially being moved, because it seems like the Jets have punted on this season in a sense. They moved on from Steve McClendon. They moved on from Le'Veon Bell. It seems like it's moving toward the future. And I think they're in the spot now where they're trying to make a determination on whether or not Sam Darnold's going to be a part of that. And it's starting to feel a lot like he's not. If he's not going to be a part of your long-term future, then you could probably make an argument that you probably should move him. But I still think you want to see what he has in the second half of this season, see what ends up happening, especially as you get some of the younger players that you'd like to get a good look at healthy. But it's starting to feel a whole lot like, you know, Sam Darnold is going to at some point be a starting quarterback for another team not named the New York Jets.
Yeah, I think we got to put this discussion into two buckets, in my opinion. Bucket number one is looking at it from a big picture, from the league standpoint. And what's fascinating to me, I'm starting to do some research on, like, this Trevor Lawrence situation. And it, to me, that's a really fascinating discussion, because you talk to a lot of industry experts. He's going to get an 8-figure guarantee on, you know, some sort of endorsements, be it, you know, Nike or some other apparel companies. And because of that, you look at all the teams that are going to need a quarterback, not just next year, but the year after. So you're going to bring teams in like Tampa Bay, New Orleans,
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, absolutely. San Francisco. And if I'm Trevor Lawrence, I may have the very unique circumstance of, A, being part of the New York Jet head coach search if they do, in fact, make a change at the end of the year, meaning if Dabo Swinney goes to, let's say, Jacksonville and not the Jets, and then saying, you know what? I may get drafted in next April's 2021 draft. I may not play. I'm going to sit here, collect all this money from Nike or Under Armour or whomever, and if I don't like the situation where whoever I get picked by, I'll wait a year. I'm getting paid. I'll work on my body. I won't get hit, and I'm still going to be the best player in the following year's draft. So I think it's a fascinating discussion when you think about all the teams that could be looking for a quarterback. Indy's one of about, I would say, 10 teams, and I put other teams in there like Denver. There's at least probably 10 to a dozen teams that'll need a quarterback. As it relates to the Jets, it's 99.9% sure they cannot trade Sam by Tuesday for one fundamental reason. too much can happen between now and the end of the year to know that you're going to get a quarterback in next year's draft. So
I agree.
Even though I would say he's been very inconsistent, I've been somewhat disappointed how he's played, because when I scouted him at SC, I thought decision-making and ball security were two areas he had to work on, and I just don't see those two areas have gotten better. And again, the tape sets the floor and the character sets the ceiling. I think he's a high-character kid. I haven't seen it improve. And, you know, Chris, you bring up Tannehill. I think that's one example. But we have seen quarterbacks have changed the scenery and do better. But if I was sitting in the seat of an acquiring team, what am I basing that on except to say it's a little bit of a hope? It's a little bit of a, you know, you're taking a bet because you haven't seen his weaknesses improve from SC to the Jets.
Yeah. So, Mr. T, I want to follow up with a couple of things. You mentioned that you mentioned that Trevor Lawrence could potentially decide to sit out if he doesn't like who's picking at the top of the draft. Would that be a situation where the Jets would consider somebody like Justin Fields?
Yeah, I think you would have to. Someone's going to have to explain to me what's wrong with Justin Fields. The first thing I would do is I would call up Kirby Smart at the University of Georgia and say, Kirby, you're a good football coach, and I know you're trying to build a winning program. Why'd you pick Jacob Fromm over Justin Fields? Like, that is the only question I have about him, because Justin Fields gets better. He's built to last. He's accurate. He's smart. He's athletic. Someone has to tell me what is wrong with Justin Fields. And the conversation for me starts with Kirby Smart at the University of Georgia.
It didn't look like anything was wrong with him yesterday at Penn State throwing four touchdown passes. He looked pretty good. And I feel like Justin Fields, the way he plays is the direction that the NFL is going at the quarterback position. I feel like if you have a quarterback that has that type of skill set, it gives you limitless possibilities on what your offense could be.
That's exactly right. I completely agree. And you know, it's funny, like, we're talking about this discussion about, you know, Dabo Sweeney, Trevor Lawrence. What's wrong with a Ryan Day, Justin Fields combination? If I was an NFL team and I had those two guys as the face of my program, I'm thrilled.
And Mr. T, and that was the second question that I was going to get to, because you mentioned Dabo potentially going to the Jacksonville Jaguars if they decide to make a coaching change down there. I mean, I know you represent coaches in football and in basketball. Is that something that you're hearing in your circles about Dabo and Ryan Day potentially wanting to make the leap from college to pro?
Yeah, I know that a number of teams have asked about Ryan Day in the past, and he would certainly be on the short list. You know, it'll be an interesting, you know, if there's, you know, I hate to speculate because these are people that already have jobs, but there could be, you know, Chris, Anita, there could be a half a dozen openings next year, and I would challenge you guys, like, give me the six most qualified people out there. I think the Ryan Days of the world and certainly the Dabo Sweeneys will be part of those conversations for sure.
Yeah. Anita Marks with you here with Chris Canty and Mike Tannenbaum. It is New York Game Day. Hour 3 kicks off now. This is Chalk Talk, brought to you by FW Webb Weil McLean Heating Contractors. FW Webb is your number one stop shop source for top quality heating equipment and parts. One great example, Weil McLean's boilers. Turn to one of FW Webb's over 90 locations for unparalleled Weil McLean inventory. And without further ado, Jordan Renan, who does a great job covering the Giants for ESPN, joins us now. So good morning, Jordan. Thank you so much for joining us. First question for you is, fill us in on all that went down with the COVID protocol and Daniel and Saquon. From what I understand, there were a number of other Giants players that were out in the city. I was curious. I was hearing, I know the players got fined for what happened, but I'm also hearing that there's a chance that there might be some benching happening on Monday night. Any truth to that? Are you hearing that at all or no?
There's nothing I've heard at this time about that. If that were the case, I would say that the players, at least aside from maybe the two players, there's more than two players actually, but the multiple players involved, they might be the only ones that know that. But if that's the case, I would say the other players are not aware of that at this time.
Jordan, I want to ask you about Andrew Thomas. We've gone back and forth about whether or not we thought that the offensive line was better with Matt Parrott playing left tackle as opposed to Thomas. And now with Will Hernandez poised to potentially miss this game on Monday night, what does that do in terms of spotlighting Andrew Thomas and his need to step up?
Yeah, I mean, look, you're going to have an old rookie left side of the line, right? I mean, Shane Lemieux is going to jump in there. He's expected to start. So you're going to have a rookie mid-round pick guard at left guard, and then a rookie left tackle against what's a really, you know, Chris, this is a really good front. So this is going to be a tough test. You know what? But you know what it does provide the Giants? It provides them an opportunity to see where Shane Lemieux is,
mm-hmm.
which I think is important this week, because if they have one player that might be, in my opinion, that the most likely player to be moved, it might be Kevin Zeitler, because there's a need for offensive line around the league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's more demand than there is supply. So if Shane Lemieux can prove that, okay, we can get by with him, not put Daniel Jones at full risk, because the reality is Andrew Thomas has been bad and struggling badly, and the Giants are going to stick with him no matter what. That's what we found out here. But if Shane Lemieux can prove that he'll be playing on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Zeitler will be playing the right side. Then you'll have to, you know, look for him. If you think Shane Lemieux can play the right side,
mm-hmm.
you know, long for the final, what, 8 games of the year?
Yep.
Then maybe you do move Kevin Zeitler. So I think that's an opportunity today. Look, Andrew Thomas, you're just going to throw him out there and try and work through this stuff. And then, you know, Mark Colombo said, you know, he's got to work on his technique. He's got to get his timing right. It just hasn't worked so far.
What about, Jordan, when it comes to Daniel Jones, do you think at some point this year, Joe Judge is going to say enough is enough with these turnovers? And not saying that he's going to bench him for the rest of his career, but at least for a game or two, so his credibility is not going to be called into question with his players, because it just seems like what he's – and I've been impressed with Joe Judge, Jordan, but it seems like what
yeah.
he's saying and what he's allowing are two different things right now.
Yeah, no, I kind of agree with you, but there's been no indication so far that he's going to go that route. I mean, he's gone out of his way publicly to not, you know, for lack of a better word, call out Daniel Jones in any way, shape, or form. Now, behind closed doors, we know that's going very differently, and he said as much, and that's just the approach he's going to take. But the Giants, look, they're sticking with Andrew Thomas. His struggles are really bad as well, right? They're sticking with Daniel Jones. I don't know if they're going to go that route. What's the only purpose of it, Mike? To kind of send a message, you think?
Well, I just think, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit, which is if the standards are the standards. You know, he comes from the Bill Belichick tree, and it's not for a purpose except, like, we're in the business of winning professional football games, and here's what I stand for. And when you meet that standard, you stick around. When you don't, we move on from you. And it could be the first pick, the last pick, or anybody in between. And if once you start eroding and compromising those standards – it's hard to build a program. And it's
yeah,
one of those
no.
things.
I mean, I totally agree with you. There's just nothing so far that to me would indicate that they're going to go that way. And I totally see the merit in that. But I just don't know if they're going to do it now. If we get to week 12, 13, 14, I think it might change. But I just don't see that. There's nothing that indicates that that's going to happen, you know, this week, next week, and the week after that. To me, they're going to stick with Daniel Jones. They want to get as much of an evaluation of him as possible. And, you know, they look at it, too. I mean, they had, what, 30 seconds left with no timeouts from their own 20-yard line last week. And this is not excuse-making. I mean, it kind of is, I guess. But, you know, they what they said is that they take every turnover on its own merit, right? And not everyone is obviously on the quarterback. But, like you said, the numbers are ridiculous. At some point, it's got to stop. And that would be a way to kind of send a message to him and the team.
Again, Jordan Renan joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Jordan, I'm curious. You know, there's so much talk about, you know, Trevor Lawrence and the Jets and the Jets getting the number one pick. But, you know, you look at the Giants' schedule and you look how, like, you know, we're all anticipating them to lose again this week, obviously. But, like, what is your gut telling you? You know, Dave Gettleman, right? Like his tenure, talk about Adam Gase needing to go. Does Dave need to go? From what I understand, Joe Judge has a lot of say and a lot of control with this Giants team and this Giants roster than Mara and Steve Tisch gave Shurmur and Ben.
Yeah. Well, they hired him. I mean, they hired Joe Judge to build his program here. Right. So it was kind of like, okay, you're going to build your program and Dave Gettleman's going to kind of work in with you. And so he's the one that was going to have to conform, right? Because let's be honest, I mean, I don't think there's any way around it looking at the results. Is what they've done so far hasn't really worked. I mean, look at the results. Look at the roster. What do they have? 5 wins the first year, 4 wins last year, so we had 9 wins, and then 1 win. So 10 wins in 2.5 seasons? I mean, come on. So, yeah, Joe Judge absolutely has a lot more say. And I think in the long run, look, this team is not going to win a lot of games. If we all, let's take a time machine back. Say, Saquon Barkley was going to basically be injured and not play the whole season. How many wins would all 4 of us predicted the Giants win? Nobody
less than 4.
Near 500.
Yeah.
Not even near it.
Yeah.
You know, we'd be probably at like 6 and under. So that's the reality. The Giants are going to win 3-4 games, 5 games probably. And you're going to look at it and say, Dave Gettleman now has 3 seasons. He hasn't topped 5 wins in any of those 3 seasons. And how close are they really to competing for, being a serious contender in the NFC? I think we could all agree they're not that close. They have a ton of work still to do. So, yeah, you know, Joe Judge has a lot to say. He's likely going to have a GM that gets paired up with him that has like-minded thinking and they're aligned on the same level, which is why it's kind of backwards to get rid of the coach and then leave the GM with the GM kind of on the hot seat. But, hey, that's where we are right now.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that, Jordan. I mean, it's not necessarily making Dave Gettleman feel great about his job security with the Giants' record in a season where the owner says that the GM has to improve his batting average. But with that being said, how much involvement would Joe Judge potentially have in a general manager's search for the Giants?
Yeah, but first let me say this. You know who Tom Mara, one of the things he said before the season, he wants to walk off the field at the end of the season and feel like this team is ready to compete. does anybody foresee that right now? I mean, that is really hard for me to foresee that. I mean, Daniel Jones has to go on an absolute tear and, like, single-handedly win 6 games for the Giants, I think, in order for you to feel that way. So I don't see that happening. But, yeah, I just think, yeah, Joe Judge is going to have a say in picking that. If you ever sat down and talked to him, you would realize he's not just going to go along with the flow and be like, sure, hire any general manager. I'm fine with whatever. And then I'm just going to, do whatever this general manager says in regards to personnel, and you'll give him full personnel. So, like, it's not going to work that way. I'm telling you. You sit down with him. I think it was Amos Jones, who's one of his, like, top assistants. Like, really, they go back a long way. He was quoted, in a couple stories when Judge was first hired. He says, when you sit down with this guy, like, if he ever goes into an interview and sits down, like, he's going to get the job. Like, he's going to convince you that he's the man. And it's the same thing, I think, when they sit down and they talk about a general manager. Ultimately, Steve Tisch and John Mara have ultimate say, right? But he's going to do a heck of a lot to shaping their opinions of where they should go in that direction. And when you do that, you have to think, and I'm guesstimating, obviously, nobody knows how this is going to turn out, but I'm guesstimating that it's going to be somebody that he fully approves of, that probably has a lot of the like-mind ideas and thinkings. And probably, if that's the case, it involves something with New England.
Jordan, you mentioned Kevin Zeitler as somebody that could potentially be on the move at the trade deadline. Anybody else from the Giants roster that Big Blue is looking to move on from?
Well, there's 2 things, Chris. So you say that, there's plenty of guys they would love to move on from. How many guys other teams around the league want, though? Right? I mean, Golden Tate sounds great in theory. You know, it's not working out. He's not really doing much. But, Mike, you're a general manager in this league. He has a $9 million salary, basically. So you're still going to have to pay him, $4.5 million this year. Is the production you're going to get from Golden Tate worth that? I mean, it's basically a rental. And then even in that case, what are you going to give up?
Yeah, I think
would you pay for that at this point at 32 years old? Declining?
I would only do it if I felt like it could get me over the hump. And, it could, for example, and I'm not saying he's going to go back to Detroit, but if you're Matt Patricia and it's playoffs or bust, those are the situations where, and I agree with you.
He's not going back to Detroit. I can guarantee that one.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that I agree with you. There's less expensive alternatives in the marketplace for receivers right now. So he could go. I doubt it. But, it would come back to, fit. And who wants to take, the money? And it would be, again, a situation where it's, winner go home.
Yeah. So, and then, obviously, there's teams calling for Evan Ingram. They have for years. But, look, the Giants view him as their top playmaker. I mean, look at the game last week. He had 9 targets and 2 touches on handoffs. So
he's a top playmaker for the other team.
He is. But they don't want to strip Daniel Jones of and leave him completely bare. And they view Evan Ingram as a player they think that they're eventually going to, get to be the player that, and I know everybody's tired of it. How long do we have to wait? I'm just giving you their perspective. They don't want to trade him. Like, I know that. They don't. I've talked to people around the league. They don't want to trade him. The teams are calling, but they don't want to get rid of him right now. Now, maybe the right offer does come in. There's a price for everybody pretty much in this league, right? So maybe a really strong offer comes in from a team where, I don't know, it's a third-round pick that's really end up being really high, or a second-round pick. Who knows? Whatever the heck it is. A third and a fourth. Or who knows? But if that's something that entices them enough to say, you know what, maybe it's time to move on from this guy. But he's the guy I think that teams are probably calling for the most, but I don't think the Giants really want to get rid of him. So to me, it's back to Kevin Zeitler's really the only one realistically I think that could get moved right now.
Jordan, I know we're up against it, but I got one more question from our program director, Ryan Hurley. He wants to know, would Bill Belichick ever leave New England and consider being president of football operations and the general manager for the Giants with Joe Judge as the head coach?
Yeah, well, that's the dream, right? It's the dream everybody has. And let's be honest, it's going to be something that at least sits in the back of everybody's head. And you know that, I don't think he would do it. There's no indication that he would at this point. But if there's a time that maybe he's vulnerable, and maybe he's, waffling back and forth of whether it's time that, this run in New England has really ended, this kind of would be the time, wouldn't it? And the Giants
feels like
there,
it.
And he has somebody he trusts as the head coach. He could still, chirp in his ear and, be involved to some degree. But, it would make sense. I can't completely rule it out. I think it's really highly unlikely. Bill Belichick has pretty much carte blanche in New England. So why would he leave there, you might say? But this is the time. I mean, he is kind of vulnerable now. That team is looking like, all right, their time, they're almost ready for that rebuild pretty much, right? Does he really want to be in a full rebuild there? Or at least here, they have some, if he believes Daniel Jones is that piece, you have a quarterback. You did start at least collecting young players. We don't know if any of them are high-end young players yet for the most part, but you at least have collected some young players. So it's an interesting thing.
You know what's interesting about Ryan's question is I have speculated for a long time that Coach Belichick was going to end his career with Washington because that's where he's from. His dad, who he revered, coached and scouted at Navy for over 50 years. There's the Steve Belichick football library at the Naval Academy. So I could see it happening one day. I could see it happening in the NFC East, but I always thought if Coach Belichick, and it is a big if, obviously, but if he ever did it, I always thought he would go back to that area of the country.
Yeah, but what does he really think of Daniel Snyder, and what does he really think of John Mara? Remember, he loved Wellington Mara. What does he really think of John Mara, the football guy?
Jordan, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Really do appreciate your time. Great insight. A lot to dive into there. All I have to say, guys, is who made that call with Bill Belichick coming to the Giants last year? I thought he'd come here as a head coach when that didn't happen and Joe Judge was hired. I threw it out there. Don't be surprised. I think that very well could happen. And also, I was told that he is enamored and is in love with Daniel Jones. So just throwing that out there. Food for thought.
It's everyone's favorite. Can he or can't he?
I'm saying I intend to take bets as soon as possible.
Really just a segment where we talk prop bets and lines.
All right, it's time for Can or Can't He, and Chris Canty is back on the show.
Let's do it, Anita.
Mike Tannenbaum, you and your son are relieved of these duties, my friend. So
Jacob's been put on the Can or Can't He practice squad is what you're talking about.
Yes, he's on the practice squad right now. All right, and so for folks who are listening, maybe this is your first time listening to this segment, these are actual real live prop bets that you can wager on today. So let's get right to it. And obviously, since the Jets play today, the Giants play on Monday. Let's start with the Jets. Patrick Mahomes, Chris, over under 271.5 passing yards and 2.5 touchdown passes. Can or can't he?
I am going to go under the 271, and I am going to go over the number of pass touchdowns. Here's why I'm going under 271. I think the Kansas City Chiefs are trying to create more variance in their offense and being able to establish a little bit of the run game. We saw them do that in inclement weather up in Buffalo, and I think that that's a part of what's going to be their championship formula. They're going to have to be able to run the football more, especially to close out games. Mr. T, you say this all the time. You throw to score, you run to win. I think that's the missing ingredient for the Chiefs, and it just so happens to set up with this matchup against the Jets because, you know, Andy Reid would love nothing more for Le'Veon Bell to know that he's got his back by feeding him the football today in the run game, showing Jets fans that Adam Gase didn't know how to use him. So I think that Pat Mahomes, he gets his touchdowns throwing the football, but I think it's also a heavy dose of Le'Veon Bell on the ground. That's why I would go under on the passing yards.
All right. Sam Darnold, over under 203.5 passing yards and really only expecting one touchdown pass for him. So you can go over a half a touchdown. So one touchdown pass from Sam Darnold wins this bet. It's a lot of juice. It's minus 200, which means you're laying 200 to win 100, but nonetheless, can or can't he?
I don't know how you can go out over on either one of those with any degree of confidence. You're talking about an offense that had 4 total yards in the second half of that game last week against the Bills. And the Bills look apathetic for the majority of that game on both sides of the ball. So I can't say Sam's going to go over 200. I can't say he's going to throw more than one touchdown pass. I'm going to go under on both.
All right. You mentioned
Mr. T, please feel free to chime in if you disagree.
I'm with you. You know, the one other thing I would add that you said earlier that I think is really an interesting development is how much Kansas City was able to run the ball against Buffalo. And the more they do that, the more interesting I think they become as a consistent championship team in terms of, hey, you play back 7-man spacing. We're just keep running it. And I do think that could bring Patrick Mahomes' numbers down over time.
Lev Bell going up against his former team. This is probably one of my favorite bets on the prop bet circuit. And that is Lev Bell scores a touchdown and Kansas City wins at minus 106. Because if there's anything we know about Andy Reid, he loves teeing up players against their former team. It's probably one of my favorite bets. You know I'm putting money on that today.
Yeah, that's free money.
Do you see? I'm assuming you see Lev Bell
scores
scoring
a touchdown and the Chiefs win. That's free money.
Right?
Am I wrong, Mike T? Am I wrong? That's free money. Where they do that at?
So, I can't disagree. So does that mean we're going to get bottles of wine, Skechers sneakers, golf balls, all these things will just keep flowing in next week to check all the sponsor boxes? Is that what you're saying, Mr. Canny?
I like it. I'm here for it.
All right. Jets wide receivers. This is who Sam's going to be tossing the rock to, and that's Mims. Over under 45.5 receiving yards, and Berrios over under 35.5 receiving yards. Very interesting here. Game script, Chris. You know, could they be playing from behind? I kind of like the overs in both of these. What do you say? Can or can't they?
Yeah, I think they're going to try to find some ways to get Mims involved. Like, they're going to be intentional about it. So I would say he would go over 45 yards. I could see that. I got to be honest. Last week, I was impressed with his debut. I mean, he had a few catches there. He looked, from a movement standpoint, like he was healthy. There's a lot to like there in terms of height, weight, speed at the receiver position. So, yeah, I think Mims goes over 45 yards because, let's face it, who else is Sam going to get the football to?
It's true. All right, let's take a look at what's going on with the Giants and the Bucks. Again, these are actual prop bets you could lay money down on right now. Tom Brady, over or under 1.5 touchdown passes.
Yeah, I'm going over on that one.
Really?
I'm going over on that one. Yeah, I mean, listen, the Giants secondary outside of James Bradbury leaves a lot to be desired, and that Bucks offense, it feels like it's starting to come into its own now. Like, there was a push and pull early on between B.A. and Tom Brady, but it seems like they're on the same page now. And with Gronk getting more involved and Scotty Miller getting more involved, yeah, over 1.5 touchdowns for Brady.
Well, it's interesting you say last time Godwin was out, and Chris Godwin is not expected to play on Monday, Ty Johnson stepped up in a big way. Ty Johnson scores a touchdown anytime, plus 375. And I'm sure on Monday, more prop bets will be released heading into Monday night. I'd be all over Ty Johnson scores a touchdown and the Bucks win. Ty Johnson over on receptions, over on yards. But there's also Scotty Miller. Scotty Miller to score a touchdown and the Bucks win is plus 265. Plus, you thought LeBell scoring and Kansas City winning was easy money. Man, no Godwin. Mike Evans is beat up. Scotty Miller, go-to guy for Tom Brady on Monday night against the Giants. He scores a touchdown and the Bucks win plus 265. Can or can't he, Chris?
Yeah, I would roll with that Scotty Miller scoring a touchdown and the Bucks winning. I would put some money on that. As far as Tyler Johnson goes, I'm not too familiar with his work, as Rick DiPietro would say. But, yeah, with Scotty Miller, for sure, I'll roll with that.
As Rick would say. And let me ask you guys this, and curious, would love for you to chime in here too, Mike, and that is Leonard Fournette. You've got Jones in the backfield, but also I think some people forget, like, this Bucks team has Leonard Fournette as their number two running back, over under 45 and a half rushing yards. Could we see more volume with Leonard Fournette going into this game, especially if it's a blowout in the fourth quarter? Can or can't he over 45 and a half rushing yards, Chris?
Leonard Fournette, I would probably go with the under on that one. I would probably go with the under on that one.
I see that one differently. I would go with the over because I think, again, they're going to be balanced. And if it's a blowout and, you know, they're going to have to give somebody the ball, I think Fournette's a really good player. I thought that was a great pickup. I think he'll have meaningful contributions coming down the home stretch here, even if it's not this week. I think he's too talented, so that seems like a low number to me.
And last but not least, Golden Tate. Now, here's follow me here, because this is so tempting. Over under 2.5 receptions. But Golden Tate has been a name that has been surfacing around the NFL as a potential trade player for the Giants heading into Tuesday. So what do you do with this, Chris? Over under 2.5 receptions for Golden Tate. It's so tempting to take the over here, but I'm concerned about maybe not playing him, having him on a pitch count because a potential trade opportunity for the Giants. What are your thoughts?
I think this is a Monday night decision. You wait till the active inactives come out, and if he's active, then you put some coin on it. If he's on the field in a uniform, he's going to catch some passes from Daniel Jones. You got to think the Giants are going to be throwing the ball because they can't move the ball on the ground. So, yeah, I would put something on it if he's playing in uniform, but if he's not playing, then obviously you don't.
They believe he's ready. Brian Fitzpatrick is not the kind of player that if you put him on the bench and need to bring him back later, that there would be hard feelings or that he would be hurt by that. He's exactly the right guy to have in this situation to sit behind Tua and continue his education. But I don't believe the Dolphins are doing this in order to develop Tua. I think they're doing it because they think he can help them win.
That is Dan Graziano talking about Tua. Again, guys, before we dive into Locks of the Week, I'd like to get your thoughts. Again, if you're just tuning in, it's New York Game Day. Anita Marks, Chris Canty, and Mike Tannenbaum. And reports are, and I want to say it's Adam Schefter who's reporting this on ESPN, and there's some other people that have reported this earlier in the week, and that is that the reason why the Miami Dolphins are going to Tua now is because of the two draft picks that they attained from the Texans, of course, in the trade with Tunsil. And because the Texans are just god-awful this season, those draft picks are going to be pretty high up, and they need a really true evaluation of what they have in Tua. Does that give you, Chris, let's start with you. Does that give you any concern in regard to just how ready you think Tua is, and is it really Tua time, or is this a Dolphins decision because of draft picks? What do you think here?
I don't have any concern about that report or that take that's surfacing. I think that's hot take TV and hot take radio. I mean, the Miami Dolphins had a plan as to when they wanted Tua to play. It was clear that it was going to be after the bye week no matter what. Now, their bye week got moved around because of COVID, and it ended up being earlier than they thought. But, I mean, I think that everybody in that organization is comfortable with the idea of Tua playing as many games as he's going to be playing. I mean, you're going to get a pretty good sample size of what the kid can be. I mean, he's got 10 games to show you exactly who and what he's all about. But I think that 10 games is more about him having the opportunity to play and develop and for the team to potentially have more upside. Because Ryan Fitzpatrick, as much as we love him and as great as he was playing, Ryan Fitzpatrick is limited in terms of what he's bringing to the table and his overall upside. That's why Ryan Fitzpatrick was drafted where he's at. That's why he's been a journeyman his entire career. Whereas when you look at Tua, he was drafted in the top five for a reason. It's because they feel like he has some traits that could allow him to be, if developed properly, a very, very good to great quarterback. So I just think that Brian Flores and Chris Greer are looking at this and saying it's an opportunity for us to get him some games as a rookie, to develop him, but also for our team to be more competitive if everything goes according to plan.
Mike?
Yeah, for me, I think this is really more about, and I think they've done a much better job of this, again, than the way Cincinnati's handled this. I think this is about we have what we hope to be a 10-year decision. Putting him out before this period of time, I think, would have been really irresponsible of any team. You know, and again, I think what Cincinnati did was irresponsible because it was a 10-year decision, and kind of give a pass to what happened with the Chargers because of the weirdness of the Tyrod Taylor situation. But when you look at Jordan Love, Herbert, Tua, and Burrow, you have four teams that invested a first-round pick this year. You want them to be the guy. You do want them to play this year. You do want to be able to evaluate them. So I think given all those sort of like factors, I think playing him now makes sense. I think this whole idea of like the playoffs, to me, what's interesting, guys, is this. Seven teams are going to make the playoffs. So they're, regardless of you know, what we feel or think, that does change the dynamic of, you know, who's going to be, quote-unquote, in the playoff mix. What we don't know, though, is making the playoffs acceptable for some teams and not for others. Now, clearly, if Miami did, that would exceed expectations, given what people thought coming into the season. But as we get into this discussion, I think, over the course of the season, is making the playoffs the same accomplishment as it used to be?
I think so, especially when you start talking about a quarterback on a rookie deal. I think that there's a lot. There's a lot to that. Like, it feels like your organization is moving in the right direction when you have that situation. So for me, if the Miami Dolphins were able to, you know, in year two of Brian Flores' tenure, you know, make the playoffs with a rookie quarterback starting the majority of the games, I would say that's a big deal.
All right, gentlemen, you know what time it is.
Anita's three locks of the week.
All right, time for my locks of the week. Like I said, I'm 11-12 on the season. Nothing to write home about. Hopefully, this is the week I go 3-0. Guys, let's start. I'm not going to bury the lead here. I'm going to go with my favorite play. My favorite play is the Green Bay Packers today. I understand winds are about 25 miles per hour there at Lambeau Field. Kirk Cousins, 0-3 against the spread in his last three games, coming off of a bye, leads the league in interceptions with 10. The Vikings defense decimated, right? They trade their best defensive rusher, Daniel Hunter on IR. A ton of DBs are going to be inactive today. So you're going to have a lot of rookies going up against Aaron Rodgers, who, again, 25 mile per hour winds, I believe, in his arm. Aaron Rodgers, the first time he went up against the Minnesota Vikings, was only pressured on 15% of his dropbacks. The Vikings secondary giving up, they're ranked 29th in yards per attempt. And even though there's no Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams and A.J. Dillon, I think, are going to step in and fill that void. Williams put up 77 yards against the Texans last week. So I'm really surprised this line isn't 7, 7.5. I think the line is really off here because I think the Vikings are just god-awful. And I think they're waving the white flag looking forward to next year. So I love the Packers here only giving up, only laying 6. It's my favorite play. Thoughts?
Yeah, I took that game in our show picks on DCR on Friday. I like the Packers as well. It does feel like Minnesota is punting on the season. They traded Yannick Ngakoue, and it's just he was one of the guys they actually traded for at the beginning of the season. So the fact that they moved on from him, it just signals that they don't feel like this is going to be a year where they're going to be as competitive as they thought. Now, that being said, this is a division game, and they did get blown out by the Packers earlier this year. So, I mean, those division games are always a little bit closer. I just think that the Packers are so much better than the Vikings this year. I feel comfortable with them being able to win this game by a touchdown.
All right. My other one is the Buffalo Bills -4.5 against the Patriots. Again, another bad weather game. Cam, we saw him give himself a pep talk on national television when he was addressing the media. I don't know, all the pep talk, all the, you know, Cam Newton, you've got to light a fire up your own butt and get going. With what? No Edelman, no N'Keal Harry. Stephon Gilmore is going to be inactive. And there's reports that his house is for sale in Boston. Chances are he could be dealt by Tuesday. Cam Newton, 2 touchdowns, 7 interceptions on the season. I know they're saying that he doesn't have the COVID-19 fog. I beg to differ. 5 of their 39 offensive drives have only resulted in touchdowns. That's it. 5 of 39, and they have 14 turnovers. Meanwhile, the Buffalo Bills, they are getting healthier. John Brown is going to be back. Levi Wallace gets back in that backfield. And even though the weather conditions, Josh Allen, some say, have one of the most strongest arms in the NFL, and we know that he can rush the football as well. I love the Buffalo Bills -5.5 here. Gentlemen?
Just as a rule of thumb, I don't bet against Bill Belichick. So,
yeah, I was going to say something very similar. This is like the perfect Bill Belichick situation where everyone's counting them out. Gilmore's out. Edelman's out. This seems like the perfect time to bet on the New England Patriots. And maybe I just have too much scar tissue from, you know, competing against him with both doing, you know, at Miami and the Jets. But, I'm just shocked at Cam Newton because he started off so good. I thought that was a great signing. And I don't know, not that I'm trying to talk myself into something here. I just don't know if I totally trust Josh Allen yet. He's been better than I thought he was going to be. But I don't know. There's just something about Coach Belichick that for so long he's been able to figure out solutions, and I'm not going to bet against him now.
Okay, that's fair. And last but not least, I'm going with a teaser here. I love the Oakland Raiders today. I think they are the better team. I get that they lost against the Bucs, but that the final score was not an indication in regard to how that game went. They were only down by 7 at the end of the third quarter. I think Gruden and Carr are going to come in. This is a Cleveland team that gave up almost 400 passing yards and 4 touchdowns to Burrow. So I see them coming in. I know a lot of people today, this week, saying that this is a better team. The Cleveland Browns are better without Odell Beckham Jr. I'm not buying that. They rank 14th in explosive plays. Meanwhile, they're giving up a ton of explosive plays. And you've got Henry Ruggs, who I'm expecting to have a big day today. So I really like this Raiders team. I'm going to tease them up. That line now has moved to 1.5. So I'm going to tease them up to +7.5. And I'm also going to tease them with the Ravens. I love the Ravens today. We talked about it earlier, coming off of a bye. Ngakoue now a part of that defensive line. This is the best team, even though the Pittsburgh Steelers are 6-0. This is the best team that they will have faced, the best secondary they will have faced. And I think the loss of Devin Bush to that linebacking core is going to be a huge hit to them in trying to contain Lamar Jackson today. So I'm going to do a two-team tease where I'm teasing, again, the Raiders up to +7.5, and I'm teasing the Ravens down to +2. So Ravens +2. Raiders +7.5. That's my teaser. Guys, final thoughts really quick.
I will say this, Anita. In that first game for your teaser, you're going head-to-head with one R.J. Bell, who's a regular on DCR as well as the Michael Kay Show, and his best bet of the week is the Cleveland Browns. So I think that's going to be interesting. But the one thing I will say is no Odell Beckham Jr. I think Kevin Stefanski and Baker Mayfield refocused that Browns offense around the running game and that offensive line. And the Raiders set up prime for that because they're one of the worst teams in being able to stop the run. They've given up the most rushing touchdowns, and they're giving up 4.6 to opposing offenses per attempt. So I would be a little bit concerned about that aspect of the Raiders going into this game just because the Raiders are going to have to find a way to slow down the Browns' offense in order to be able to give their offense more opportunities, more possessions.
Yeah, and for me, I like Pittsburgh over Baltimore today just because I think Pittsburgh's defense is so good. I was really impressed last week. I thought Tennessee was going to beat Pittsburgh, and I thought the difference in the game, I thought Pittsburgh just won up front on both lines of scrimmage. You know, we could talk about Tennessee losing Tyler Lewan and how ineffective Tyson Braylow was, but I think, in my opinion, Pittsburgh is better up front on both sides of the ball against Baltimore, and I think that's where – I like Pittsburgh a lot today, actually. I was very impressed with them last week.
All right. Those are your locks of the week. Again, just to recap, Green Bay -6, Bills -4.5, and a teaser with the Oakland Raiders +7.5 and the Ravens +2.
The bomb is about to be dropped. It's Tannenbaum's Bomb of the Week.
All right, gentlemen, we got about 4 minutes left in the show before Dan Grosso takes over with your Jets pregame show. Before our score predictions, as always, it's Mike Tannenbaum's bomb of the week. The most outlandish prediction will be what?
The Pittsburgh Steelers 31, the Baltimore Football Ravens 10.
I love Pittsburgh.
I'm sorry, Anita.
Stop yourself. Okay, bottle of wine. You know, Chris, you knew that was coming, right? Bottle of wine.
Sure, knew that was coming.
Knew that was coming. Whoa, you know I'm gonna be. You know I'm gonna be texting your butt all afternoon, Mr. Mike T. All right, let's go to our score predictions again. The Jets they play first against Kansas City. Chris, let's start with you. What's the score of this game?
I got it. 35-13, Kansas City. It's just too much of Pat Mahomes and Le'Veon Bell and that Kansas City offense. They've got a 4-by-1 relay team as their wide receiver core. I just think it's too much for the Jets to be able to keep up. And as good as the Jets looked in the first half of last week's game on the offensive side of the ball, they looked as bad as I've seen them offensively in the second half. I don't know what to expect from that group other than the fact that they're not going to put a lot of points on the board. So, again, I got that 35-13 Chiefs.
Mike?
Yeah, similar. I got 28-10 Chiefs. I think for the Jets to keep it close, they really have to establish the line of scrimmage today. Chiefs, you know, one of their best players, I don't even think he's underrated anymore, but Chris Jones, that's going to be a guy they need to absolutely neutralize because, I don't think you can go in there saying, hey, we're going to stop that Chiefs offense, but they're going to need to play well on offense. If I'm Sam Darnold, and I'm going to quiet down all this noise that we've talked about for 3 hours and talked about all the time in the New York market, go play great today. Go play great. Go play the Kansas City Chiefs defense, and let's see what you can do.
All right, Chris, I'm kind of near you. I've got Kansas City 32-17. I've got Le'Veon Bell scoring a touchdown and the Kansas City Chiefs winning. Like you said, I think that's printing money.
Biggest part of that take is how did the Jets score 17 points?
Yeah, I think garbage time. That's what I think. I think garbage time.
Okay.
You know, maybe P. Ryan scores a touchdown. Mims gets in. Who knows?
Okay.
Monday night, Tampa Bay Bucks here in New York against the Giants. Mike, let's start with you here. What's your final score?
Yeah, I'm very strong on Tampa right now. Really been impressed the last couple of weeks. I'm going to go 21-0. I think they're going to shut him out. And I think, again, Todd Bowles is going to come back to a stadium he knows well. And someone's going to have to – I'm ready to have that argument of, you know, who's the better defense right now in the NFL? Is it Tampa Bay or is it Pittsburgh? But I'm just really impressed by how well they're playing on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I'm with Mr. T on that one. I've got a 31-13 Tampa Bay for an offense and a quarterback that has turnover problems. They're going up against the third best defense in terms of overall takeaways. So I just feel like Tampa Bay is going to take the football over from Daniel Jones, especially with the matchups that the Bucs defensive front has against that offensive line of the Giants. I look for Daniel Jones to be under the rest to make some poor decisions. I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers score on defense, and then their offense continues to roll. So I got it 31-13 Bucks.
All right, guys. I've got it 28-13 Bucks. 28-13. Gentlemen, as I always say, I love waking up and spending my Sunday mornings with you. Hopefully our listeners do as well. Enjoy the games. Like I said, I'll be – man, this Ravens-Pittsburgh game is going to be really exciting, and it's Tua time. This is really an exciting Week 8. And from all of us here at 98.7 ESPN, we're glad that you decided to spend the morning with us to get you ready for Week 8. Nikki's been producing the show back in New York. Nikki, great job. Love you, my girl. And everybody, enjoy. Have a great Week 8 here on 98.7 ESPN.
New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.